Welcome to Verse and Voice, the daily breadcast.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're doing something a bit focused, actually. A deep dive into, well, just one chapter, Genesis 7.
Ah, okay. Genesis 7. The flood narrative really kicks into high gear there.
Exactly. You'd mentioned wanting to get a better handle on some foundational stories, and we thought, you know, let's really zoom in.
Sounds good. Sometimes looking closely at one part illuminates the whole thing, doesn't it?
That's the idea. So our mission, if you will, is to walk through the events of this chapter, pinpoint the key moments, and really understand their immediate impact, just as the text lays it out.
Okay. Unpacking it piece by piece, where do we start?
Right at the beginning, Genesis 7, verse 1. It kicks off with a command from the Lord to Noah. What hits you first about that initial instruction?
Well, the first thing is how comprehensive it is. It's not just Noah. Go into the ark, you and your whole family.
Right, the whole family. It immediately sets up this idea of, like, a complete rescue, maybe? A new start centered on Noah?
Exactly. And then you get the instructions about the animals. And those are, well, they're pretty specific, aren't they?
Very specific. What stands out there?
You see this clear distinction. 7 pairs of every kind of clean animal, but only 1 pair of the unclean.
7 pairs versus 1 pair. Hmm.
And 7 pairs of the birds, too. The text explicitly says why, to keep their various kinds alive throughout the earth. It's about future life, repopulation.
Okay, so repopulation is the stated goal. But that difference in numbers, 7 clean versus 1 unclean, does that suggest anything else maybe, even at this stage?
That's a really good question. I mean, yes, primarily survival, keeping the species going.
Mm.
But having more clean animals? Well, it could hint at future needs, couldn't it?
Like what kind of needs?
Perhaps for sacrifices later on, or even just for food once they're back on dry land. It's not explicitly stated here, but the numbers are suggestive, you know.
It does feel like a bit of foreshadowing, almost, planting seeds for what comes after the flood right there in the Ark's inventory.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah. It's subtly setting the stage.
Now, along with who goes in, there's also a when, a specific time frame.
Yes, 7 days.
Yeah.
From the command until the flood starts.
7 days. Any significance to that number, that waiting period?
Well, 7 is often symbolic in Genesis and elsewhere. Think Creation Week.
Ah, right.
So it could echo that. Maybe underlining this as a kind of decreation before a recreation. It's a deliberate pause. It gives Noah time to get everything and everyone settled.
A final week of the old world, perhaps?
Possibly. A final chance. Even though the judgment seems set, it marks a clear transition point.
Okay, so that week passes, and then we get to verses 6 through 10, the actual start of the flood. What are the key details there?
First, we get Noah's age. Very specific.
Oh.
600 years old.
Grounds the story in his lifespan.
Exactly. It connects this massive event to the human timeline in Genesis. And then it repeats that Noah, his family, all the animals, they did enter the ark.
Yeah.
Just as God commanded.
So emphasizing his obedience again.
Definitely. It underscores that theme. And then after the 7 days, boom, the floodwaters came on the earth. It's stark, direct.
No dramatic lead up in that verse, just...
It happened.
Pretty much. The waiting's over. The action begins.
And how it begins. Verses 11 and 12 describe where the water comes from. And it's, well, it's more than just rain, isn't it?
Oh, much more. It's described almost like the world is coming apart. All the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of the heavens were opened.
Wow. So water from below and water from above.
Exactly. It's not just a storm. It's like the fundamental boundaries containing the waters are broken. A total deluge from every direction.
That paints an incredible picture of chaos, really.
It does. And then it specifies the duration of the rainfall. 40 days and 40 nights.
40 days. Another significant number often associated with testing or judgment.
Precisely. It emphasizes the sustained, overwhelming nature of this event. Relentless rain on top of the water coming from the deep.
Okay, so the sources are clear. The intensity is clear. Then verses 13 to 16 circle back to who is in the ark. Yes, it reiterates who's safe inside. It lists Noah, his wife, his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, their wives.
The core family unit.
And then all the animals again. Wild animals, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, birds. It uses the phrase according to their kinds again, emphasizing the diversity being preserved.
Every kind of creature with the breath of life.
Right. They go in male and female as commanded, but then comes a really striking detail at the end of verse 16.
What's that?
Then the Lord shut him in.
God himself closes the door.
Exactly. It's an act of divine protection, securing them inside.
Yeah.
But it's also, well, it's final, isn't it? It seals off the ark from the world outside.
Yeah.
A definitive separation.
That's incredibly powerful. Safe inside, but also marking the point of no return for everything else.
Precisely. And following that ceiling, verses 17 to 20 describe just how bad it got outside, the extent of the flood.
How high did the waters get?
The text is emphatic. The waters increased. They lifted the ark so it floated high above the earth. They prevailed exceedingly, it says.
So the ark is completely adrift. No connection to land.
None. And then the key detail. The waters covered all the high mountains under the entire heavens.
All the high mountains.
Yes. And it even gives a measurement. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward after the mountains were covered.
15 cubits. That's what, over 20 feet above the mountaintops?
Roughly, yes. It's stressing the absolute totality of the flood. There was no escape, nowhere to hide on earth. It was complete inundation.
That just boggles the mind, the scale of it. Which leads us, I guess, to the inevitable result in verses 21 to 24.
Yes, the consequences. It's stark.
How does it put it?
And all flesh died that moved on the earth.
Yeah.
Birds, livestock, beasts, all swarming creatures that swarm on the earth, and all mankind.
Everyone and everything on land.
Everything. It repeats for emphasis. Everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. No ambiguity.
Utter devastation.
Total. And then the contrast. He blotted out every living thing that was on the face of the ground. They were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left, and those with him in the ark.
Just the ark floating on this world of water.
Yes. And the final verse of the chapter gives another time frame. And the waters prevailed on the earth for 150 days.
150 days. Wow. That's 5 months.
5 months of the earth being completely submerged. It really emphasizes the duration of this state of judgment, the period of waiting in the ark.
So looking back at just this one chapter, Genesis 7, it's an incredibly dense and dramatic narrative. What are the sort of main takeaways you see?
Well, several things really stand out, I think. First, God's direct command and sovereign action. It's initiated and controlled by the divine.
Okay, what else?
Noah's obedience. It's mentioned repeatedly. He just does exactly what he is told, which is central to his survival.
Right, obedience is key.
Then the flood itself, its source from both below and above, its sheer scale covering everything, its devastating totality. It's presented as an overwhelming, inescapable judgment.
And the ark's role.
The ark is crucial. It's the vessel of salvation, divinely secured, and the careful inclusion of the animals, specifically the pairs for future repopulation, points towards renewal.
Preservation and renewal.
Exactly. And finally, that long duration, the 40 days of rain, the 150 days of the water prevailing, it underscores the finality of this cataclysm for the old world.
It really paints a picture. And for our listeners, you know, who want to understand these foundational texts, this chapter alone gives you so much. It's a powerful story, packed with detail and consequence.
Absolutely. It's a pivotal moment in the Genesis narrative.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Genesis 7, considering the scale of destruction, the complete reset it describes, what questions does it leave us with? Maybe about the world before the flood or about this new beginning?
That's a great point to ponder. What does this immense divine action suggest about, well, God's relationship with creation and humanity as presented in this text? And what about Noah's role, his obedience amidst total chaos?
Yeah, lots to think about. What does this story tell us about how these ancient writers saw history unfolding, shaped by both divine will and human response? Something to definitely mull over. Hopefully this closer look has provided some clarity on this intense chapter.